And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're welcome along to Thursday's 9 till noon show on this, the 29th of February, 2024, the last day of the month. I do hope you're all very well indeed. How are you keeping? It's fresh but cold out there this morning, and it's going to be some showers. It's going to be cold over the weekend, but getting milder next week, hopefully. But anyway, we're here to warm the cockles of your heart, and you can warm ours by texting and WhatsApping 086 6025000, 086 6025000. That's for your WhatsApps and your texts as well, of course, and your voice notes, your VNs. Don't forget, you can send in your voice notes to WhatsApp if you want to express yourself that way. If you want to give us a call, we have Caroline and Shannon taking your calls on 07491 25000, and you can email us from wherever you are listening to the show, comments@highlandradio.com. if you want to watch the program at home on your Fire Stick or Smart TV, go to the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, and we're across your mobile devices on that app and on Facebook and on X. Busy morning as always, a Thursday morning with the newspapers. The lead in the Tyrconnell Tribune: the decision by the HSE to close the health centre in Kilmacrenan has led to calls from Councillor Michael McBride and local families to have the decision overturned as a matter of urgency. The decision has come without any public consultation, we're told, and the reaction has been one of anger and dismay and disgust. And as Official Ireland closes the door on the health centre in Kilmacrenan, perhaps it is time for the people to finally shout stop, because if they don't, then every other element of government support will be gone. On to the Donegal news this morning. Luxury home up for sale with €500,000 price cut. Presence of defective material sees price drop. A spectacular designer home of over 6,000 square feet with an indoor heated pool and panoramic views of a green on farm, Inch Island and Loch Swilly comes onto the market today with a price reduction of €500,000. The new selling price of €450,000 also includes two adjoining sites of 7.7 of an acre each. Carrigart at Cornamaddy, Burt, had been agreed for sale at €950,000 just 2 years ago. However, it's since been tested for mica, and the brochure carries the following caveat: deteriorous materials. A survey has been carried out on the building, and there is a high risk to deterioration from potential freeze thaw damage. But still, the price tag €450,000. I'm not sure how that works with entering onto schemes and what have you, but anyway, it's half price at this point. The Derry news this morning: government urged to scrap Legacy Act. The British government's Legacy Act should be abandoned, Derry MP has said. SDLP leader and Foyle MP Colm Eastwood urged the government to scrap the controversial Troubles Law following a decision in the High Court yesterday. The Legacy Act stops new Troubles era cases and inquests from starting and offers a conditional amnesty to those accused of killings. The law applies to former members of the security forces and to ex-paramilitaries. The Irish government against this. It was championed for the most part, from what I could see, by Boris Johnson. On to the Nationals now. The Irish Independent, and I wonder how many of us find ourselves in this situation. A woman who had her application for a cost rental apartment rejected because she did not meet the affordability criteria has said the housing crisis is leaving people with no option but to emigrate. Jess, who's 31, works as a policy advisor to Sinn Féin TD Martin Kenny, and earns a decent wage and has always been able to pay her monthly rent. Her previous experience with a serious illness means she probably won't be able to secure a mortgage. She has been told she won't qualify for a protection insurance, a policy that pays off your home loan if you die during the term of the mortgage. When she was just 27, the Cork woman had to undergo a hysterectomy following a delayed diagnosis of endometriosis, a debilitating womb condition. But because of that, she's going to struggle now to get home insurance. Without home insurance, going to struggle to get a mortgage, and now is facing emigration. On to the Irish Times this morning. Senior HSE executive secures €389,000 exit package. The stories keep coming, don't they? one of the most senior executives in the HSE is to receive a redundancy package of nearly €400,000 under a deal approved by government departments and finalised in recent days. The HSE said yesterday that Dean Sullivan, who was appointed 6 years ago as Deputy Director General, had left its employment by agreement and redundancy. Details of the agreement with Mr. Sullivan are likely to generate further controversy over redundancy payments in the public sector, coming in the wake of revelations of payments made to senior executives in RTE. And it just seems to be a cash cow working for the state in one form or other. I mean, to leave your job and to leave with €400,000 in your back pocket, or €250,000 or €385,000, how much money is being paid out in severance packages, exit packages, redundancy packages? Well, the deal governing Mr. Sullivan's departure from the health service came about following a mediation process, the HSE said. Mr. Sullivan had been employed by the HSE since July 2017 as Deputy Director General, Chief Strategy and Planning Officer, initially for a 5-year period. In July 2022, he became HSE Chief Strategy Officer. So how can you work for the HSE for, you know, 5 or 6 years and then you leave with €388,000? It's really, really quite remarkable. The Irish Daily Mail: the media minister will face calls at a crunch meeting tomorrow to sack the entire board of RTE and appoint a new one she can fully trust after the dramatic fallout with the chair of the board. There's been a major fracturing of the relationship between the board and Catherine Martin in the wake of her de facto sacking of former chair Sue Nirahala on television last week. A defiant Minister Martin insisted in the Dáil yesterday that she was going to grasp the nettle on the series of crises at RTE after repeatedly being accused of being missing in action throughout the row, throughout the now 9-month period of unfolding controversy at the national broadcaster. In fairness, I kind of did only start linking her name to this whole controversy relatively recently, but she's being told she needs to get a broom out and clear shop. The Farmers' Journal this morning: thousands of farmers will receive a cash flow injection this week as Agri-Climate Rural Environment Scheme acres payments finally issue. The interim payments are worth a total of €113.6 million. Payments issued at a flat rate of €5,000 for those participating in acres, cooperating projects, and €4,000 for those who entered the scheme through the general route, Minister Charlie McConnellogue said. And this is just an incredibly heartbreaking story. It's one of those stories I was reading about and I heard some of it, and it just stops you completely in your tracks because you just try and put yourself... you don't try and put yourself. You find yourself put in the emotional position of imagining what it must be like, and then you sort of can't allow it almost. It's incredibly sad. It's in the Irish Daily Mirror. The grieving mum of a boy who died after a traffic collision at the weekend has given birth. Shane Dylan Cody Coleman was born on Tuesday to parents Laura Cody and Gary Coleman. Baby Shane Dylan's big brother Dylan died yesterday morning after suffering injuries on Sunday afternoon in Purcell Park, Shannon, County Clare. Dylan hailed a hero on social media for donating his organs to save young children. Got to meet his baby brother before he passed away. His heartbroken mum, Laura, confirmed. She also confirmed Dylan's organs will be donated to children in need. Dylan was airlifted to University Hospital Limerick following the horror incident. After treatment there and subsequently at Temple Street Hospital in Dublin, he was sadly pronounced dead yesterday. And there's absolutely no doubt that he'll be welcomed, or has been welcomed, into heaven, and hopefully from there he'll keep a close eye on his baby brother, who he did get to meet before sadly passing away. On to the Irish Sun this morning, and an ex-assistant of an Irish MEP has told a court he hacked their social media and posted about a naked pic of another politician. I remember this story at the time. I remember seeing the post. I was scrolling through, as it was then, Twitter, and it came from an account with the name associated with Luke Ming Flanagan. And it was one of those, wow, okay, because it was very, it was designed clearly to hurt Luke Ming Flanagan as much as possible. There was what seemed like a purpose misspelling. It was done in the middle of the night, and it was created as if to give the impression he was Googling and accidentally Googled in Twitter, if you know what I mean. We're going to be speaking to Luke Ming Flanagan about that very, very shortly. And the reason, and well, I'll explain to Luke Ming Flanagan listeners as to the reason why I thought it important we speak to him. But anyway, Mr. Flanagan has been completely and utterly vindicated. And the person has admitted responsibility and could face up to a year in prison as a result of his actions. Finally, the Irish Star this morning. Kellogg's boss, Gary Pilnick, has sparked outrage after suggesting struggling families eat cereal for dinner. The multi-millionaire executive was compared to French Queen Marie Antoinette, who infamously said, "Let them eat cake," after his tone-deaf tip. He claimed it would be much more affordable. Adding cereal for dinner is something that is probably more on trend now, and we would expect to continue as that consumer is under pressure. No, I don't think that's an appropriate thing to say, especially that you might likely profit from it. All right, then. As I mentioned just before the break, an ex-assistant of an Irish MEP has told a court he hacked their social media and posted about a naked pic of another politician. The September 2020 post was made on Luke Ming Flanagan's ex-account. It was Twitter at that time, and it related to a photo about former Green Party candidate Saoirse McHugh skinny dipping. The post was later deleted, and the Midlands Northwest MEP claimed that his account had been hacked. And of course, now that we know, the politician reported the issue to the European Parliament, who then handed the case over to the authorities in Brussels, and an investigation was launched. Dermot Hayes, Mr. Flanagan's former assistant, yesterday admitted in court he was the person behind the controversial post. Now, what happens when these things happen is, at the time, it's screenshot and it's shared around and it's covered in all the media, and everybody knows about it. But then what often happens is that when the person who's the victim of such a situation is vindicated fully, you don't often hear about it as much, or it certainly doesn't get as much traction. So that's why I thought it incredibly important to invite Northwest MEP Luke Ming Flanagan onto the programme, just to make as many people as possible as aware of his vindication. And we appreciate you accepting the invite, Luke Ming. Good morning to you.
Well, I'm only delighted to, and you've always facilitated me, and there's a lot of talk about public broadcasting at the moment, and I'm saying this on every local radio station. I'm not trying to butter you up, because you can say whatever you want to me, but you do public service broadcasting, and thank you.
You would be probably seen as someone, you know, thick-skinned, you know, with the cut and thrust of politics. You're prepared to give it out, you're prepared to take it. But this is different, and this is personal, and then it involves family and all that kind of stuff. What did it feel like, I suppose, when you learned that this had been posted and then saw how it was being bandied around and being discussed and your name was being dragged through the mud? How did that feel as a human?
Well, when I woke up that morning after the tweet was posted, and unfortunately it's a bad habit, and I'd advise people against it, but I looked at my Twitter account first thing, probably at about 8:30 that morning, and I was just stunned. There was a viral commentary going on about the fact that a post had been tweeted from my account and that it had been deleted. Someone had taken a screenshot of it and basically sent it around again. And my first thought was, how the hell am I going to clear my name here? Because we often hear stories about how people claim they've been hacked after something terrible is put out from their account. People don't believe them. And generally, the vast majority of cases, people can't prove that they were hacked. So for me, my first reaction was, and I rang a former assistant of mine, a friend of mine, and I said to him, basically, I am F.KED. How the hell am I going to get out of this? And it took a couple of days before I got my head around it. But I didn't have a couple of days to get my head around it, because ye have a job to do. And I'm not saying ye all do it in a bad way or a good way, but ye have a job to do. So I was inevitably contacted by numerous media organisations. And while all of that immense pressure was happening, I had to try and work out how exactly did this happen. Unfortunately, the assistant who actually replaced this guy, who's absolutely brilliant, the person who replaced him, a female colleague of mine, herself and her partner, who is a commuter expert, came up with a theory as to how it would have happened. How would someone, without using my current password, access my Twitter account? And they worked it out for me. And a couple of people online did as well, but that story didn't gain traction. No one seemed to be want to be interested in it. And the answer to my problem was that at one stage, Twitter had something called a third-party application called Tweetcaster, a bit like, let's say, if you're on Facebook, if Facebook had another app that you could use Facebook on, Twitter had that at one stage. And the benefit of using that app was, at that stage, Twitter only allowed you a very limited number of characters. The images and videos that you could post were very limited. So I started using Tweetcaster for a while.
You could schedule tweets as well, yeah, and that type of stuff. I mean, it was advantageous in that.
Yes, it was. And for me, it was stated in court by Diarmaid Hayes yesterday that he operated my social media accounts. I can guarantee you absolutely no one operates their social media account, my social media account, except me. And sure, all you have to do is follow my threads on Twitter. Some of the things that I say.
Well, you wouldn't pay any. You wouldn't pay anyone to it.
No, you wouldn't.
The thing about it is, and this is where it came clear to me that there was a plan to this. At the time of the posting, the misspelling, that it be created as if it were, something that you put into Google. And then it wasn't even left there so you could quote it or whatever and say, evidently, this is not me. I'm going to leave this here to prove that it isn't, or whatever action that you wanted to take. Everything had been framed in such a way that as soon as you were explaining you were losing, it was done in a way that had painted you really quite significantly into a corner.
Well, you talk about it. It's a very good point when you're explaining you're losing, and that's a bad situation to be in. But I was in even a worse situation. I couldn't even explain, because once I'd worked out how they had got in, because the old password remains the same on Tweetcaster, regardless of whether you change it. Once I'd worked that out, I had a very, very good idea about the individual who did it. But I couldn't say this. So you say when you're explaining, you're losing. I couldn't even explain. And this caused me a lot of problem because obviously I'm not just dealing with this issue. At that time, I had just got a really, really good result, and a really good result for Donegal on the Common Agricultural Policy. My amendment on convergence had gone through. I could have been going on the radio at that time. And it's great as a politician to be able to spread good news and to be able to legitimately claim you're responsible for it. I couldn't go on the radio because it was inevitable. You're a journalist. If I went on the radio at that time, like, what else? You were inevitably going to ask me. You wouldn't be doing your job if you did. And I couldn't answer the question because I was afraid I'd prejudice the case. So not only could I not talk about it, and not only could I not explain, even if I was losing, I couldn't talk about any other issue. And as a result, and it was said to me on one of the radio stations a few weeks ago, you've been kind of quiet. Well, there's a reason. At the beginning, I was quiet because I was afraid I'd be asked questions about it. And in the meantime, it severely damaged my confidence that people would actually believe I'd do such a horrible thing. So confidence has been low. I've been suffering from depression as a result of it. I've since been diagnosed with autism. And with autism, you can ruminate a lot about stuff. And on an issue like this, I couldn't get it out of my head. And it got me very down.
Hopefully you are on the way up again, because it's not just you, of course. As much as if you're in the public eye, you might want to shield your family from it. They'll understand the cut and thrust of politics, right? But it's the personal side of it then that can be very difficult. The impact was not only on you, and you feel the impact as well that it might have on other members of your family.
Well, the worst impact for me was the impact that it did have on my family. Like only 6 months ago, and this is what's important about it, this just wasn't a crime on the day. It was a crime that continued for 3.5 years because he didn't come out and put his hands up. So even 6 months ago, I was dealing with this. My 9-year-old daughter, who doesn't have a phone, but some of her friends do, presented her with a picture of me, an obscene picture of me, a meme that was made from South Park. And my daughter walked in with the phone and her friend and said, "What's this about, Daddy? Can you explain it?" Now, it's very hard to explain to a 9-year-old child about a cartoon image where there is sexually explicit content in it. That is immensely difficult to deal with. I was also out for a walk one day with my 19-year-old daughter, who also has autism. And when I'm out for a walk, I tend to walk a bit faster than the people with me for whatever reason. I had walked on a little bit ahead and I bumped into a neighbour. And he said, "What were you doing with that Saoirse McHugh one?" And my daughter had just come around the corner when he'd finished saying that. I fobbed it off and I walked on. And my daughter said to me, "What did that man say to you?" I said, "He said nothing." And she said, "He said something about Saoirse McHugh." She said, "Are you all right, Daddy?" And at the time, I was wondering, was she all right? Because she was going through a lot of problems. And it caused her more problems. And then to make it even worse, my wife, she works for Tusla. She's had comments made about her on Twitter. And one particular one was, "I feel sorry for Luke Ming Flanagan's wife because of what he did." So they all had to deal with that. It was difficult to come out in public. And look, you have good people and bad people in towns. And I have supporters and people who don't support me. And the people who don't support me were only glad to believe this and cast it up at me. And unfortunately, for an ever and a day into the future, there'll always be a very, very, very small minority who don't care about the truth on this, and they will continue to throw it at me. So I'll pay the price forever.
You know, the person who is responsible for this, Dermot Hayes, has admitted it, eventually admitted it.
Well, he had it forced out.
Yeah, well, it came out of him one way or other. It could have come out of much earlier, and it wouldn't have stopped a lot of it, but it would have stopped some of this. What about what happens to him now? There are I think the prosecutor is looking for a year. They're content if it's, or they'll accept it being suspended. You're in Brussels. I'm not sure if Dermot Hayes is based in Brussels, but what do you want to happen next? I mean, can you share the city with this person?
I think that's a very good question. You're the first person who's asked it of me, and it's a question we ask at home. I have three daughters. I spend, I was on 88 flights last year. I'll put it like that. I spend hundreds of the days of the year in Brussels, meaning there are times when, in order to be with my children, they have to come out and visit me. They are now a little bit reluctant. I have a 21-year-old daughter who would be wary of coming out as a result of it. I have a 19-year-old daughter who'd be wary. My 9-year-old, they don't give a damn, but it doesn't make it comfortable here. So the ideal scenario for me would be that he wouldn't be living in the city anymore. But look, I don't know, is that going to happen? But he, at the moment, is facing anything from a year in jail to having to do community service. So that's basically what he's facing. But I have to say, I'd have to thank the Belgian judicial system and the Belgian police force, and in particular, the security apparatus in the European Parliament. They all came around me and supported me as soon as this happened. And if they didn't, I would not have been able to clear my name. It would have been impossible. And many people out there aren't in the lucky position that I'm in, that all of those forces came on my side. If you were an ordinary citizen out there, you would have a really, really difficult job proving this, and you'd have that slur on you for the rest of your life. But look, I've got a really good result, and I'm really pleased with that. And my family are pleased with it. And I'm also, in relation to Saoirse McHugh, who is also a victim of this, it's really hard for women to get involved in politics. It's a very male-dominated job, and this doesn't help. And I hope it doesn't discourage her from continuing to be involved in politics, because she showed herself to be very skillful and that she has potential in that area. So for me, it's important to acknowledge that this had an impact on Saoirse McHugh as well, because she's a fine person.
Yeah, indeed. But then it holds sort of the whole thing holds a mirror up to society and how we behave and how we react, and how, you know, a lot of people believe they're critical thinkers or think for themselves, and maybe they don't. They take anything as read as fact. But I don't believe that we can sort of reverse that anymore. There was a time I would have hoped that maybe this was a stage we were going through, but it seems now on social media, collateral damage is perfectly acceptable. It doesn't matter if we're talking about children dying or a politician being having their reputation harmed or whatever. It's a toxic space, social media. This is always going to be a factor of it. There'll still be people, you might not be able to track them all down, that will probably share that picture in years to come, the original meme that suggests that you were guilty of something that you weren't. But I think the genie's out of the bottle now.
Yeah, it certainly is. I suppose, and I'm only about 800 metres away from a statue of Mr. Gutenberg down here in Strasbourg, and he invented the printing press. And the problem ultimately isn't the printing press and the mass dissemination of false information through books and leaflets at the time. And now the problem isn't necessarily Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. The problem is the people who do this and the problem who say it. And someone said to me once, you can't blame walls for graffiti. People have to put something on the walls. And at the end of the day, it's down to human beings being decent or not. But look, we do have a problem with Facebook. We do have a problem with the dissemination of false information. And you're right, the genie is out of the bottle. And while it initially was a massive help to me, because when I was canvassing in 2011 in Roscommon Leitrim, when I turned up in Carrick because of a Facebook post, I had 26 people there waiting to canvass for me. And when I went across the bridge in Carrick and Shannon to the Roscommon side to Portobello, I had 15 people there waiting to canvass for me. So while initially for me it was a big help, unfortunately it's an animal that was friendly that's now gone mad.
I have two brief questions to ask you. Firstly, have you at any point considered not seeking re-election off the back of this and other stuff?
I have thought about it, all right. I seriously thought about it, and it's not just for these reasons. You're leaving your children behind every Monday morning, and many people have to do that and work on a building site and break their back, but leaving them every Monday morning and coming back on a Friday, and then you throw this in on top of it, it does make you think. But I sat down and I genuinely thought about it, and I looked at what I'm involved in. I'm involved in the reform of the Common Agricultural Policy. We're going to have another reform in a couple of years' time. I want to be involved in that. I was successful the last time. And in particular, for your listeners, and this isn't electioneering, this is something that's very dear to my heart, we are in a process on defective concrete. We're starting to get some traction in the European Union, and this is going to run on for the next few months and maybe for the next couple of years. And I want to be there to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, initially when I got elected to the European Parliament, I thought, okay, I can make noise, I can agitate. I have to say I've been surprised at the cooperation that I've got. And it's because of that, even though I do find it stressful, and God love me, life is stressful, and some people find life stressful. But for me, the rewards for my constituents can be great if I can keep doing this. So I'm going to stick with it.
Finally, we spoke yesterday to a very respected vet, Gerard Rorty, as it relates to the adoption of the Nature Restoration Law. He warned that this is going to have a devastated impact on agriculture industry, particularly in Donegal, given the makeup of our ground up here. There is a line in the document somewhere that sort of suggests that the future could be water buffalo here in Donegal, which some might see as adding insult to injury. The government is saying kind of we've got 2 years to get this right for us, that, you know, Europe is not necessarily going to dictate how we implement this. But would you share Dr. Rorty's concerns? One concern, actually, I put it to Dr. Rorty yesterday, my concern about flooding of properties, and that's and how we defend properties, and that's actually a big issue here in Donegal. It didn't seem to be a particular concern of his, but I did hear it from someone else this morning. That's what jumped out at me, as well as the impact on farming. What is your stance on the Nature Restoration Law as it stands? You know, it's been stripped back, but we seem to still be having to do with the worst elements of it from a Donegal perspective, an Irish perspective.
Well, I voted against it for three reasons. I voted against it because of a lack of funding. I voted against it on the basis that it wasn't fair. And you talked about how Donegal will have to do more. All down along the Western Seaboard will have to do more. This is very much targeted at Natura 2000 areas up until 2030. And for your listeners who might know not exactly what that is, that means counties like Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim, Mayo and Galway, up until 2030, they will focus on these areas. Now, the problem that I have with that is that these areas have to compete in the same market as farmers in the Golden Vale. They have to sell their product undifferentiated into supermarkets at the same price without any benefit for being more environmentally friendly. And they are also the people, even though I have had a lot of success on CAP reform, the people of Donegal still get less than everywhere else. And that's a fact. No one can deny that. So the people who are getting less and the people who are sustainably farming with extensive suckler farming, there's very, very little in intensive beef or dairy in Donegal. It is these areas that will have to do it first. And in relation to funding, there is no funding for this. And last October, I was very pleased to hear the government announce this 3.15 billion Climate and Nature Fund. And having looked at it and drilled down into it and trying to work out where it's going to go, it's very clear to me, and it's also clear to some environmental NGOs, that this money will not be coming to agriculture. And what I'm being told,
will that be used as a land grab?
Well, what that money potentially will be used for is to pay Caoiltear and Bord na Móna to do work. And I have no problem with that. They have a lot of work to do and they need this money. But there is far more money needed. And while we were told in the European Parliament that for every euro you put into this, you can get 38 euro back, they still can't find a mechanism to fund it. And what they're telling us is by 2027, they will have worked out how much money we will need. This is coming into place in 2026. But then they contradict themselves by saying that it will only be by 2030 that we will know how much environmental damage is done and how much work will need to be done. So they're saying we'll know how much we need to pay for it by 2027, but we won't really know until 2030. And as a member of the European Parliament, I know for a fact there is no money available. The European Union piggy bank is empty and there is no appetite among European Union countries to increase that budget. So what we are now asking farmers to do is, in the same way as we are asking householders to do, and in the same way as we're asking people who are using their cars to do, we're asking everyone to change something that no one can afford to do and we're not putting any money towards it. And don't get me wrong, Greg, we are in the middle of a serious climate crisis. We are in the middle of a biodiversity crisis. I have three daughters, as I said earlier. Their future is tenuous because of this. And it's because of this, I believe we need to do this right and get it right now. But the way that they've done it is it's just got everyone's backs up and now people will be reluctant to cooperate. And that is bad news.
Luke McFlanagan, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. He's MEP for Midlands North West, 086 60 25,000. Right, we have to take a break. We'll be back with more after these messages. Okay, as you would know, it's a tough environment to do business anyway, between rates and rising costs, electricity, you know, raw produce, whatever it might be. And also, too, with the cost of living crisis that affects us here more than elsewhere in Donegal, you know, people perhaps not spending as much. So it's tough enough to be in business without turning up in the morning or getting a call in the middle of the night to say that for no reason, there's never a reason, but for no reason whatsoever, your business has been attacked. Dara Fury is owner of Sean Fury Insurance Limited, estate agents and insurance brokers. He joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Dara.
How you doing, Greg? You well?
I'm all right, Dara. So tell us what happened to your business, what did you find out, when did you find out, and sort of what damage was done?
I have a small, it wasn't my business, there was two other businesses as well, but I'll tell you about mine. Is I'm in the Market Square in Buncrana, and I have a small sign outside. It's been there for 7 or 8 years, but I was driving past a couple of Sunday nights ago and I noticed the sign broken. Now, the sign's 7 foot high up on the wall, Greg, so it's not something that would be broken easily, and it was quite a sturdy sign, so you would have to rip it to break it. So I assume that that's vandalism of some sort. And that was 2 weekends ago. And then last Saturday night, there was another shop had their window shattered in the main street, and a third shop had their window broken as well. And that happened late at night, so that was definitely vandalism. And to make it worse, one of the shops called the guy down to fix the window. And when the guy was down fixing the window, he got a hard time as well because he was fixing the window, you know. So,
well, I've been in contact.
Just,
I've had
it
contact.
Doesn't add up, Greg, you know.
I've had contact with that person that came down to fix the window. And he, I mean, the only word to describe it, he was assaulted. I'm not sure if it's the same individuals responsible for the vandalism that he had the interaction with, but they don't care. If I'm not mistaken, they videoed this and posted it on social media. They seemingly do not care. They're a law unto themselves.
And that's I suppose, that's not our message at Buncrana. You know, Greg, it's the same as every town in Donegal. You know, we're trying to pick ourselves up. We're trying to do our best. And, you know, our message is that we're open for business and it's a nice place to come to and visit and all that type of stuff.
Well, come here, Dara, I'm going to come back to you and talk about that because the future is bright for Buncrana and we need to focus on the positives as well as the negatives. Stay with me as I welcome on to the programme as well, Councillor Jack Murray. As I say, Councillor, I'm not sure who was involved, who wasn't involved, if it's the same people that gave the repair person the hassle that they did. But I'll tell you, they don't seem to care. They don't seem to be afraid to be identified. Someone's actually even videoing it and putting it up on social media.
Yeah, unfortunately, that assault on the man repairing the shop was widely circulated on social media. I've spoken to him in the meantime, and my understanding of it was different people were responsible for assaulting him and those that broke the window. But I would say it's only a matter of time before those responsible for breaking the windows were identified. So I would appeal to them now, if they're listening to this, to come forward before it goes to the guards and just come forward with the money to make those repairs that are necessary. And Darrell alluded to it too, and would yourself, Buncrana has never looked better. The main street, if you take a walk from one end to the other, looks absolutely fantastic, and it's down to the local businesses. And Buncrana isn't the town that's full of big, large, multinational, multi-million euro businesses. Every one of those businesses on the main street are small, family-owned businesses employing local people. So people depend on them for their livelihood, as well as
pumping a fortune back into the local economy as well in so many different ways. But so how do we get a handle on this small minority that are responsible for this? The people involved in the assault of the repair person, young people that don't seem to care. There's at least three. There's two with him, one videoing it. You're of the belief that there are different people to breaking the windows, but that type of activity is as worrying as the earlier activity. What is there a problem with people walking around the streets doing this stuff on a regular basis?
No, I wouldn't want to make it in any way look like Buncrana is some kind of a lawless society. Buncrana is a very, very safe town with full of very good people. These are isolated incidents, but I would also say that Buncrana also has a lot of CCTV all up over the main street, and these people will be identified. So it's on them to come forward now. And I know that before Christmas, the likes of the Christmas tree of the main street was damaged. CCTV was there and covered it. Those responsible came forward and paid for the damage within a couple of hours of that being made known. And I'm sure that they will reflect on that and they won't have done it again. So for those responsible for this, I would ask, come forward, pay the damage. Like, there will be no naming and shaming. It'll never happen again, I hope. I think everybody can learn their lesson from that. But let the town continue to flourish. Let the businesses who are doing so much for the town operate and do what they do best, because people need to reflect on who are they hurting. Like, they're hurting small, local, family-owned businesses, employing your friends, your neighbours in the town, and doing good for everybody in this town and in this community. So think to what end.
So
we're all young, we might make stupid mistakes.
You've got the agreement of An Garda Síochána Síochána, because these are criminal acts. You've the agreement of An Garda Síochána Síochána that if they come forward and pay for the repair of this property, they won't face any sanction from the Garda at all?
No, I don't have that agreement.
Well, you can't make that commitment either.
The Gardaí can pursue it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
you can't actually make that commitment.
Yeah,
just to be fair, because...
I'm just saying, it would be my preference that they would come forward, repair the damage, pay for the money, but ultimately the criminal actions are a matter
for the Gardaí. Okay. And as well as that too, you know, anyone with influence on these people, no one wants that they're... people close to them to be engaged in this type of stuff. Stay with me, Dara. Let's talk about the positives. As Councillor Murray says, these are isolated incidents, though we don't want to see any of them. Buncrana looks beautiful, as we heard from Councillor Jack Murray. Vibrant shopping area, a safe shopping area as well. And as I say, the future is bright, isn't it, in terms of, returning vacant property to alternative uses, you know, a nice mix of business and residential, and of course then the huge investment that's on the horizon for the shorefront and elsewhere.
Yeah, I think the town's looking really well, Greg. Just to give you a couple of statistics that I worked out, there was a thing in RTE the other day that said the national vacancy rate for commercial properties is about 14.3%. Buncrana stands at about 4.5% on the main street. There's only really probably two commercial premises up for letting in Buncrana, and then once we have those let, we're pushing on up, you know. And we have the likes of Carrick Dunn came to the town recently, which is a good anchor tenant, and that's bringing people to the town. And then, you know, things that you helped us with, Greg, remember there was a parking issue a couple of months ago
where
the council
were
trying to change the parking situation. You know, they parked that, for want of a better word, because of your appeal on Highland Radio. There was so many locals came down to the local meeting and sort of people power changed the council's view on it. And now that's, you know, they stayed with the way they were, and that's really, really working.
And credit to the council for that as well. Yeah, and credit to the council for that as well, because obviously at the time you highlight these things, I presume the plan was based with the best interests of Buncrana at heart, but obviously then they listened to the people that are most in the know, that is the locals, and says, right, we can look at it this a different way. So credit to the council as well in terms of working with businesses and locals to do the right thing.
Oh, definitely, Greg, yeah. Because we have a couple of new places opening up recently. And some more opening up. And when they open up, the council will get the rates. So whatever they're losing in the parking, they're going to get the rates. So they're still getting the same amount of money. So it's a good decision for the council. So well done to them. It took a wee bit of arm wrestling, but sure, well done to them for doing it. And the other thing as well is with Buncrana, do you know the vacant homes grant?
Yeah.
We have about 60 of them approved for Buncrana. Wow. So, you know, if you come through the town, you see all these vacant buildings, mm-hmm. or vacant houses, and some of them are looking a bit run down. The idea is that in the next year, 18 months, 2 years, they're all going to be occupied and done up, you know. So
really,
people power in Buncrana. Buncrana is solving its own problems, you know. Now, it's not to say the same problems that are national problems like housing and health and stuff like that, they also still exist in Buncrana. But the people in Buncrana are doing really, really good work to pick up the town, get it up and going. And we don't need these people doing this type of stuff at the weekend.
All right.
You know, sort of mindless damage like that, you know, knifing us in the back when we're trying to do the work, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Buncrana open for business, loads of businesses. It is a shopping destination as well too, so get that message out of there. And also good parking. Dara Fury, yeah. Thanks very
when
much.
When you come... Huh? Last thing, Greg. When are you coming down to visit us? When was the last time you were down for your lunch in Buncrana?
Well, I didn't have lunch there, but I was up in Buncrana not so long ago, and I can tell you what I bought. I bought a suite of furniture. No, I didn't. What did I buy? I bought a table and chairs, and I bought and I bought a saucepan set. So in Buncrana,
very good. So when will you?
And
when
I bought a stove. We bought a stove in Buncrana as well. I don't know. I have to just realise I do all my shopping in Buncrana, Dara. Are you offering me coffee, by the way?
Well, there you are. If you want, I'll buy it. No problem.
All right. Good man, Dara.
Thanks, Greg.
I'll be down soon. Don't worry about that. Okay. We're in Carndon, not too far away next week. Councillor Murray. Okay. So I think we've got a decent mix there of 95% plug in Buncrana, 5% saying, look, lads and lassies, quit this because things are on the up and we don't need any detractors.
Yeah, 100%. And look, the attitude there that Dara's putting forward, that's reflective of all the business owners and Buncrana Main Street and the community that we have, the Tidy Towns volunteers. Just there's so much great work happening on Buncrana. There's a lot more planned to happen on Buncrana. It's a great place to visit. And we just, look, those people that are responsible for this just need to cop themselves on, reflect on what they've done, and just stop from doing it and let the town continue to flourish, because we've fantastic people here and we have a great offering. So let's just focus on that.
We got a tabletop in Buncrana as well. I forgot about that. a granite work surface. I sound like I've got money, but anyway, it was part of doing up a room. So can't say I don't shop locally in Buncrana. All right, Councillor Murray, take care of yourself.
Fair play, Greg.
Right,
thank you.
What else? There's other stuff. I must live in Buncrana. I've only just realised that now. All right.